Hello and welcome to Synopsis, your weekly roundup of news and analysis from OMFIF around the world, coming to you from OMFIF headquarters here in the City of London. I'm Julian Fraser. Today we're discussing the European Central Bank's return to quantitative easing, claustrophobia on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, and Facebook's digital currency, Libra. All that, and more besides, coming up next. And welcome to this week's edition of Synopsis. This month, the European Central Bank will restart its quantitative easing program. As Valentin Lazier, chief economist of the National Bank of Romania, wrote for the OMFIF website, the ECB has made several arguments to justify its decision. Some are transparent, such as the need to combat feeble economic growth, while others are veiled. Meeting the inflation target of below but close to 2% is the ECB's only statutory objective, but it is unclear what close to 2% means. From ECB Executive Board statements, one might draw the conclusion that only 1.9% is considered sufficiently close, which is absurd. No central bank can meet its target so precisely. The crucial question, though, is to what extent the inflation target of below but close to 2% that policymakers set at the start of this century still corresponds to reality. Many of the relations that were valid before 2007 no longer hold. For several reasons, the inflation rate corresponding to price stability might have fallen to 1.5% or perhaps even 1% from 2%. Stimulating economic growth is not a statutory objective of the ECB. And nevertheless, for the last few years, the central bank has been very active in this field, being referred to in some circles as the only game in town. The ECB's efforts to prevent below potential growth relate to a paradigm shift in economic thinking. For millennia, it was accepted that economies evolve cyclically, but starting in the middle of the 20th century, more and more central banks have conducted macroeconomic engineering by trying to level down the economic cycle. We have thus come to live in a world where excessive growth is accepted, while recessions, which represent nothing more than economic normality, are rejected. Through it all, of the many reasons for continuing QE, only one, that of meeting the ECB's inflation target, is endorsed both by statute and economic logic, however debatable it might be. In a long-form article, OMFIF economist Pierre Otley wrote about how the US Federal Reserve's key challenge for the next 6 months will be managing its liabilities. Since the 2008 financial crisis, the size of the Fed's asset holdings has grown around fivefold, reaching almost $4.5 trillion in 2014 from less than $900 billion in early 2008. It has since declined to below $4 trillion, but growth is set to resume with the Fed's announced permanent open market operations. For central banks, the enduring legacy of the crisis is that they are now a bulwark in money markets and have taken on a critical role in providing overnight liquidity to the financial system. Various lending facilities and liquidity management practices now take up space on the liability side of the balance sheet. Their recent growth has precipitated a decline in the reserves balance available in the financial system. Most reserve balances are concentrated among a small number of systemically important banks that are reluctant to lend these out. The four largest US banks, namely JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo, held $377 billion in reserves as of the second quarter of this year. Financial intermediaries relying on reserves will feel increasingly claustrophobic in the context of the growing coterie of investors accessing the balance sheet for liquidity management. The Fed's twin approach, involving repo interventions available since September and permanent growth of the balance sheet at $120 billion per month through 2020, has calmed money markets. However, its ability to prevent a year-end spike in funding costs will be tested in December. On the whole, permanent balance sheet growth is welcome, but should be complemented by other measures to reduce reliance on other liability-side facilities that have caused uncertainty in funding markets. The introduction of a standing repo facility was discussed at the June and September meetings of the Federal Open Market Committee, but progress has been slow. This would reduce regulatory reliance on reserves themselves and curb uncertainty around the composition mix of the balance sheet. Libra, the global digital currency proposed by Facebook, has caused a stir among regulators and finance ministries. Last week we released a podcast featuring Libra co-creator Christian Catalini, and now an abbreviated transcript of his initial discussion with OMFIF's Bazen Patel and Tunis Brozens, lead economist for digital finance and regulation at ING, has been published on the OMFIF website. Christian addresses in particular Libra's objectives and how it distinguishes itself from other cryptocurrencies, as well as the likely frictions to adoption that the currency may face. The second installment in our two-part Libra series with Balvin, Christian and Tunis was released earlier this week and deals with the technological practicalities that will affect the currency and how global payment systems will transform over the next 5 years. You can listen to their conversation in full on the OnFIF website or wherever you get your podcast. Turning from podcasts and digital currencies to the corporeal plane of existence, next week in London we will be holding two high-level meetings with senior politicians and regulators. On Tuesday the 5th of November, Simon Ridley from the UK Department for Exiting the EU will lead a roundtable discussion on Britain's economic partnership with Europe and the conditions for negotiating a trade deal. Then on Wednesday, Andrew Bailey, CEO of the Financial Conduct Authority, will speak about the future of UK regulation and enhancing transparency of FCA processes and decision-making. More details about those meetings can be found on the OnFIF website, and links to the relevant webpages regarding everything mentioned are also included in the description of this podcast. A great many monetary policy committees will be convening next week, none less significant than that of the Bank of England, which will assemble on Thursday the 7th of November. Other major central banks meeting next week include the Reserve Bank of Australia, Bank of Thailand, and National Bank of Poland, to name just a few. And that is all for this week's edition of the OnFIF Synopsis. To read in greater detail about what we've discussed, visit www.onfif.org. And if you'd like to receive our editorial output and details about forthcoming meetings, sign up at onfif.org/subscribe. I'm Julian Fraser. Thank you for listening.